I've been triple down in these last 3 weeks, 2.5 weeks on TikTok. It's an interesting approach. And one thing Gary says is attention is the greatest asset out there. And I was talking to someone last night. I used this comparison of if I told you that you could put you and what you do on a billboard on, let's say, the Garden State Parkway, would you do it? And it was free. You'd say, everyone would say 100%, yes. And I say, there's no different. And if not, it's more valuable if you actually took that and posted on these platforms and did it for free. Because when people are driving by these billboards, chances are everyone in the car is on their phone, and the drivers nowadays are on their phone as well. So why not show up where their attention is in that sense?
Your network is your net worth. Come listen to some of the most successful people I know share invaluable knowledge, stories, and advice in real estate, business, and beyond. This is Weiss Advice. Whether you want to take your business or personal life to the next level, look no further. Welcome back to Weiss Advice. I am your host, Yona Weiss. It brings me tremendous pleasure today to have Hakeem Velez with us today on the line. What's going on, Hakeem?
Yona, what's going on, my friend? Super, super happy to be here with you on your show, man.
I'm super happy that you take the time and you're joining us. You know, you're one of the people that I thought of first when I launched this podcast. Like, who can I get? Like, someone who's like relevant. He's hip. He's with the times. He's producing tremendous amount of content, and he's a real estate investor. And like, there are not like so many people that fit all of those. You know, check all those boxes. So I appreciate you joining me.
Absolutely, man. I was actually talking to my business manager last night, and after like all the different challenges you've done in the past, I'm always telling him about them. And I was like, oh, you remember that guy who did that challenge? He's like, oh yeah, I remember. You've never met him or talked to him, but he knows who you are, which is really cool.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So guys, get a little bit of context. I'd like to introduce our guests, see who they are. You may have heard of Hakeem. He's a professional football player in the NFL. Played for the Cardinals for 3 years, Detroit Lions, New York Giants. But now you're going back, and I want to touch on that a little bit because you retired for a little bit, took a little break, and now you're getting back into it. He's also, like I mentioned before, he's a real estate investor, and he started that. And one of the most amazing things that, you know, I've learned from him is just how he started that while he was playing, you know, professional sports, which is, there aren't many people doing that. And another thing that he's very big on is speaking about, you know, and trying to help and inform people who are professional athletes or who are getting into that about financial knowledge, I guess, just basics of finances, which unfortunately a lot of people aren't taught. He also runs a media company called Perspective Global Media, which they're doing a lot of social media and podcast and post-production stuff for people, entrepreneurs, real estate people. So we're going to put his information in the show notes. You can check him out there. Hakeem, tell me what's going on. I remember you a couple of years ago, right? You retired from the NFL. It was like you had a family, right? You had a baby, and you're like, this is what I want. I just want to spend time with my kids, you know? So what's the change? What's bringing you back?
I've definitely got one. I've got that itch back. Two, I've gotten to see the early stages of my daughter's life, which has been amazing. Watching her walk, seeing her first steps, hearing her first words, all that type of stuff, which has been amazing. And just simply getting that itch back and having the clarity. When I was playing, I was a solopreneur. I was kind of doing everything that the weight of the world felt like on my shoulders. Didn't have a team built around me. Didn't have an admin. Didn't have anything in that sense. And in this past year to 18 months since I've been out of the NFL, I've built a team around me. Got 11 people that are, you know, on my, you could say staff, but I'd say I work for them. That's definitely helped me delegate a lot of different things that I'm doing and have a lot of more mental headspace and mental clarity to know and actually feel that itch that, oh man, I still actually want to play football and tap even deeper into that social equity amongst all the other stuff that I've been doing over the years.
So partially, you know, obviously the fact that you were able to build this business and then, you know, this media company and have a whole team that's essentially running, you know, running the show, you know, you're giving 100%. Them, as the CEO, you're not, you're not meant to be doing all that stuff, right? You're giving directives to managers and to other people who are able to function and run a business.
100%. It's definitely, I like to consider myself a practitioner where you're not just delegating and closing your eyes with everything. So, I've gotten good at everything in the business to be able to judge everything, output wise from all of my employees. But yeah, being able to replace myself in a whole bunch of different facets of the business has taught me a lot of headspace.
What I want to know is, now that you're going back into, into the limelight, and obviously with the COVID and everything, they're opening back up, right? I mean, the season is planned to open back up in the fall.
I don't know. We'll see. I'm more on the side as I don't think that there's going to be a season this year, honestly. I just think there's a lot of risk. There's a lot of, it's multifaceted. If there is a season, there's going to definitely be an asterisk behind it, because if there's going to be a season, the owners are regardless going to want to put a product on the field. And I think there's enough people out there that if a whole bunch of players get COVID, there's a lot of people out there that have been chomping at the bit to get an opportunity and I think would play regardless. And the owners don't make their money from fans being in the stands anyway. They make all their money from the TV contracts, and the ratings are going to be through the roof because we've been without sports for so long at this point. I think it just runs the risk of, a quarterback is so important in the NFL, and say a starting quarterback gets it and the backup and the third string gets it, I don't know what's necessarily going to happen. Like, you can bring in a street guy, but it's pretty, pretty hard to kind of, learn an entire NFL offense in that sense in a short period of time. And then I think the players have a lot of power in this situation. It's not many have been too vocal, at least in the NFL. But yesterday I saw an account tweeted out, one of the sports accounts tweeted out that there's been discussions that the teams will travel the day of game and not stay in hotels, which is like, I don't see many guys being okay with that. And it was an A-list player, Tyrann Mathieu, quoted the tweet and was like, pretty much like, hell no, we're not doing that, essentially. So it's like, that it's just going to be interesting because the players have a lot more power than they realize, but then the owners can still figure out a way to put out some type of product on the field. So honestly, we'll see.
It's interesting. It definitely is interesting, and it's interesting times on so many facets, but that's one piece, of a very big part of the American culture, obviously centers around football and professional sports in general. So it's going to be interesting what happens. What I'd like to see, is that you've been very outspoken about financial literacy and real estate investing, especially when it comes to professional athletes who very few and far between. And I spoke with Will Smith, who I don't know if you know, I think he was also a former NFL player. Yep. About his real estate investing career and how he started also while he was in the league, but
he bought some duplexes, right, back in the day.
Yeah, I think so, and he had some single families also. But what was interesting to me, and I think that's the message here for me as well, is there are very, very few professional athletes that even invest in real estate.
Yeah, it's there are some that do. Some are very, 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 very passive about it and don't really have their ear to the ground in that sense. But yeah, there really isn't much. I'm actually starting a new, no promotion here, but I'm starting a new podcast vertical called Pro Athletes in Real Estate just like literally uncover all the, because there are some, and I'm finding out most of them. After I get done an interview and I ask, like, hey, do you know any other guys that are in the league that are also investing? And it's like, oh, these five guys are, and then trying to reach out to them. But there really isn't many, because one thing I've seen just from my own experience is a lot of, and it can be slightly a reason why some guys go broke, is in the NFL, and I'm not sure about the other pro sports, everything kind of gets done for you. And it gets easy to get complacent with everything. On top of that, your finances. Like, your license is expired, you give it to a guy who works for the team and they'll go get you a new license. You need your laundry done, this service will take care of it for you. You need a chef, they're in-house taking care of that for you. And then it's like finances, like, give your money to this guy and he'll take care of it for you. And it's like, everything's taken care of and like your only sole focus is football. And a lot of people get caught up in that. And then all of a sudden when the rug is pulled out from below you, you're like, where's my money? And
well, like, what do you think about that? I mean, is that, that obviously can't be a good thing.
No, it's definitely not sustainable. It's an issue. It's a reason why I'm passionate about one. One of my more favorite speeches that I've done was a speech to a room of financial advisors and wealth managers who work with athletes and kind of talking about the divide and the disconnect between the advisor and the athlete. Like it's just, that's the relationship. We're going to allocate X amount of my income to investments and this and that, alternative investments. I'll talk to you in 6 months versus it needs to be a hand-holding process and more of an educational process. Cause like a lot of players don't have the right relationship that they need to have with money because it's like if you don't have financial literacy, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how much money you'll make. Like you inevitably will go broke.
Yeah. And we've seen that, you see that too many times, unfortunately,
100%.
Which is crazy when you think about people, in the NFL and professional sports, you're making a lot of money. You're making, mid-range six figures, if not more.
And, 100%.
And that's, I mean, that's
the lottery concept.
That's like the top 1%, of earners in the U.S.
One thing I talk about, and a lot, I think I've only made one video talking about it, is a lot of people don't also understand how players are paid. It could be a conspiracy that the owners are in cahoot and it's done on purpose, almost like the carrot theory. So players continue to come back. So they have you almost as a slave to the paycheck forever. Is the way players are paid only 17 weeks out of the 52 week year. So you take, rookie minimum, my rookie year was $450,000. And you take that, if you divide it by 52, that's around $8,000 a week, which is, it's a lot, but it's more manageable than $26,000 a week. And you're taking a young, 23-year-old kid and giving them $26,000 a week. It's a lot easier to justify spending $10,000 a week when it looks like and feels like you're saving $16,000. Mm-hmm. Because you could do that every week and save $16,000. Spend 10, and what happens is, and you see it, is that person gets the spending habits of someone who's actually making $26,000 a week out of 52 weeks of the year, and they're spending so heavily, but they're in season. And then when the off season starts, usually your spending goes up because now you're home with your friends, now you're going on trips, now you're going out all the time and stuff like that. And quickly but surely, what you see is it's a, like, by May, June, these guys are running out of their money, and that's when you're seeing guys asking to borrow money from you. That's when you're seeing guys, when we get back for OTAs and mini camp, you'll see guys who will cut you in line because you can see the guys who went broke. You can see the desperation in their eyes. If I don't make this team, I can't pay my mortgage. If I don't make this team, I can't pay my car note. And that's where one of the largest problems lies. And like I said, I don't know if it's a conspiracy from an owner standpoint, because if they were paid over 52 weeks of the year, it'd be a lot more manageable. And it's on top of it, you're taking someone because of NCAA rules, never been able to have a job, because of AAU sports and summer sports. If you're one of the most high performing athletes in the world, chances are you probably played sports year round. So you never had a summer job. So a lot of people put it on the athletes, like, oh, they should have financial literacy. Like, financial literacy is not taught in school. Mm-hmm. And your average American household, money's not talked about. It's right. It's not like a sympathy. It's not like a, feel bad for these guys. This is a shining a light on this is an actual issue. You look at most lottery winners, it's not a coincidence that they go broke because they don't have financial literacy.
Absolutely. Now, besides for this podcast that you started, which is really cool, I'm definitely going to subscribe to that because that's awesome. Getting professional athletes to talk about real estate, because that's something I'm really interested in. Also, I mean, obviously real estate and for interviewing professional athletes. So, but are you doing anything else like proactive in terms of like that financial education for players?
Proactively for me, it's really just content to begin mm-hmm. with. Like, I don't have like a product in that sense that I sell to my peers. Like, even like the podcast production company, like, we work with people who are like 35 and up. like, because I think if you're younger, you're under 35, if you can't figure out how to start a podcast, you probably won't be successful anyway in that sense. So I just, it's almost Gary V type method of not necessarily having a product to sell to your actual core following and your core fans, because it makes the relationship more genuine when there's literally like, I'm giving this content with nothing expected, you know, sign up for this financial education course, sign right. up for this, sign up for that. It's more, let me just give it all. And just the brand that will kind of be built on the back end will pay dividends in the long term.
Yeah, hopefully. I agree with that. Now, speaking of Gary Vee, let's change gears for a second, because you run a media production company, right? Your main focus, obviously, when we talk about media today, it's social media. Obviously, 100%. that's what's happening in the world. You know, obviously there's email content and there's web content and stuff like that. But the main thing is social media. So what, and we talked a little bit about this offline, but what's kind of your biggest resource right now in social media?
I've been triple down in these last 3 weeks, 2.5 weeks on TikTok. TikTok is, you know, a lot of people, I get the same reaction out of most people of, you know, I think it's just this dancing platform and, you know, you got to know how to dance and stuff like that. I've personally never put out a dance on TikTok, but in the last 3 weeks, I've acquired 26,000 followers and have had a video get to 1.2 million views, 400,000 views, 300,000 views, 200,000 views, and a bunch that are in the tens and 50s of thousands. It's been wild. It's a massive land grab for people who are entrepreneurs, people in the business world, people who have some type of value to give in that sense. Mm. You know, most people think it's just a bunch of 12 to 14 year olds on the platform. But in reality, there's a lot of older people and there's a lot of eyes on the platform that aren't necessarily putting out content. And mm-hmm. essentially the way that the algorithms work is there's eyes and then there's pipes of content. And if the pipes aren't full, but there's a lot of eyes on a platform, the platform has to disperse that content out to all the people that are out there in that sense. And mm-hmm. I, from my own experience, just auditing the people who followed me, I'd say maybe 3 to 5% of the people on the platform are even posting. Like my average follower has zero posts of content there. And which allows you to, when I started really posting 3 weeks ago, I only had 50 followers. And we're at 26,000 now solely wow. off the fact that I'm posting, like it's volume of creative. I'm testing different stuff every day. Like, oh, that works. Like that video that has 1.2 million views. Like it's a video that I put on LinkedIn in Instagram. It was a video talking about when I was in my freshman year of college, I had an iPhone repair business. Like my little brother cracked his phone for like the 10th time. And I told my dad, let me check it out. Went on YouTube. Bought a new screen on Amazon for 20, 30 bucks. Took me 6 hours, took his phone apart, put it back together, and it worked. And then I was like, let me check it out on my phone. Took my phone apart over and over again so I could do it from 6 hours to 20 minutes and started an iPhone repair business. Used to charge 60 bucks. The iPhone kiosks at the mall were charging 100 bucks. And I just did that at scale. But like me saying that over a minute and overlaying some words in contextual TikTok form, now has 1.2 million views. Like that same video might have had 1,000 views on LinkedIn, might have had right. 800 views on Instagram. It's just about friction and where people are actually watching. Like
right.
there's eyes.
This is the question. This is the question I asked you offline, but I want to ask you again now because my understanding, and you know, I hear Gary Vee like doubling down on TikTok. And I told you I watched this video with Charlie D'Amelio, who's like one of the most famous TikTokers, right? Who you told me she's making now $40 million. A year from TikTok videos, from endorsements and all kinds of stuff, which is crazy. But for someone who's average, not getting necessarily endorsements, whatever, but how does that translate to business? Because obviously you're going on there and you're as a social media company that is catering to business owners, financial advisors, real estate owners, right? Entrepreneurs, you're putting them out there for business content, right? In a sense. So how does that translate to business?
It's an interesting approach. And one thing Gary says is attention is the greatest asset out there. And one, that's where the attention is. Two, as a real estate person, I compare this to, as buying real estate in New York City in the 50s, buying real estate in San Francisco years ago. And not waiting, but essentially waiting on it, like knowing, but knowing right now New York is New York in that sense, because it's just looking at the history of the different platforms, how they evolve and how fast they can evolve. Like TikTok is Instagram's most, like, that's the only conceivable threat to Instagram. And they're a feature away from becoming the Instagram of the day. Take it another level, like if business is something that you plan on doing long term and like in perpetuity and not something, you know, you're trying to make $1 million this next year and, you know, go to Bali and live there forever, then you have to understand that the core of a platform right now is, you know, 14 to 22 year olds, let's say. And in 10 years, those 14 to 22 year olds are going to be 24 to 32 year olds, which are the most dominant, most popular age group out there in that sense. And just looking at the acceleration of the growth of the platform, and then just understanding that the platform of the future is going to be in something that looks like TikTok. So if we don't know how to communicate on a platform like that right now, then in 5 to 10 years, when the platform of the future is something like this, we're going to become irrelevant. We're going to be the people who are just on Facebook and don't even know how to use Instagram and don't know how to use LinkedIn. And just, you know, the people who stay away from LinkedIn because they're like, I don't do that social media stuff. And that's the punchline, because there's people right now who are 25 to 35 years old who are going to become that in 10 years because their ego, or what, not even ego. I think it's more just ignorance in a positive way. Ignorance mean like just not knowing that you can post business content and not dancing content, and you can post what you're passionate about. If you like to drum, you like to play the saxophone, you can just post that. And because of the way the algorithm works, you can get the massive land grab. So when New York City becomes New York City in 2015, and you can sell your flat that you bought for $50,000 for $7 million or something like something wild that. Because now if that's the platform, if that's the Instagram of the day, but now you have 150,000 followers because you've been posting on there for 2 years at this point, you're going to have all the leverage when it's coming to outreach to a new show, when it's coming to getting a speaking engagement, when it's coming to just as a, you know, people check people's social profiles when you're about to do business with them, when you're about to, and it's like, oh, this guy Yona has this many followers. Wow. Let me check. Like, that matters at the end of the day. And I just think there's a massive opportunity there. And I'm it's fresh. Like it's like I said, I posted something at 1 a.m. last night and I woke up this morning at 45,000 views. And it's like, that's as someone who is a practitioner on the social channels, that's mind blowing to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'd like to, you know, touch on something you said, that why people may not be using so many different platforms. There's a lot of different reasons why, and I'll just speak for myself personally, why I'm not like out there. And I literally this week, I posted my first Instagram post ever.
Let's go.
Okay. Which was a post about this podcast, you know, about an episode, you know, just released. And it's because I don't really understand the platform. You know, obviously every platform has a different currency and has a different way of the algorithm works, et cetera. So it's just about learning it. So I think that for me, it's about that I don't really understand, you know, all these different platforms. And it takes a lot of time to put in to understand each one and then to spend time on each one and kind of nurture each one. So it's like, can I go all in on one, right? Or maybe two, and then get my maximum reach through that? Or should I try to just spread myself across everything? You know, not Gary Vee talks about spreading across everything, but he's got a whole team of people
that. That's very true. One thing he says that I resonate with is that he says that these, like, understanding how to use these platforms is as important, if not more important, as it used to be as balancing your checkbook. Because it's, like I said, attention's the greatest asset out there. And if that's true, then all of us need to take at least 5 hours, if not 10 hours, just consuming. Spending 5 hours just consuming, you consuming cost segregation content on LinkedIn, on Instagram, and just consuming, understanding, okay, that's how I should do something like that. Or people are doing stuff like that. Okay, people are doing stuff like that. And then it's just, it comes to a point of now you understand the creative, the different versions of stuff that, how you can do it to make it contextual to the people who are watching stuff on there. And then it comes down to just literally ideas and just making, like just posting at such an unemotional scale. I was talking to someone last night. I used this comparison of, if I told you that you could put you and what you do on a billboard on, let's say, the Garden State Parkway, would you do it? And it was free. You'd say, everyone would say 100%, yes. And I'd say, there's no different. And if not, it's more valuable if you actually took that and posted on these platforms and did it for free. Because when people are driving by these billboards, chances are everyone in the car is on their phone, and the drivers nowadays are on their phone as well. So why not show up where their attention is in that sense?
Excellent point. That's awesome. All right, I want to jump right into the final four over here, Akeem, because we could go on all day with this.
100%.
But we got to keep to our time limits. First question for you, what is the worst job you ever had?
Ooh, the worst job that I ever had was, I used to work for a beet company, like like the vegetable beets.
Oh, wow.
Yes. There's a company called Love Beets. They were flavor infused beets, and I was an ambassador to the company. So I used to go to the Wegmans, the Whole Foods, the, what other store did I go to? I went to Wegmans and Whole Foods. And I used to set up the sample tables, and I used to stand there for 4 to 8 hours a day. And every person who walked by, hey, you want to try a beet? And your average person would go, oh, I hate beets. Like, I'll get out of here. Like, a lot of people are very passionate about how much they don't like beets. And then I'd come up with a follow line, like, you want to make sure you hate beets? Or then people, so it's because, like, beets are one of those things where it's like, not many people are like indifferent about beets. You either hate beets or you love beets. And that was kind of another line, was someone say, oh, I love beets. And I say, oh, that's interesting. That's the name of our company. And I used to give them a sample, and it was rough, but it was cool because it was interesting way to learn, like, just different ways to approach people and, like, honestly get salesy with it, because I, like, being able to, because that those beets were, like, someone who did not like beets, if you did try this, like, sweet fire or this honey and ginger beet, because they were infused with so much flavor, they were, like, 3 out of 4 people who hated beets, but actually I convinced them to try it. They actually liked it, and then they bought it, which was like crazy. Like, I think the most I sold was like 94 packages of beets in 4 hours, which was like crazy. But it was a rough job just standing there for 4 to 8 hours. Like, my back would hurt so bad. And I was in college. We all have those jobs.
Yeah. Wow. That's crazy. Crazy story. Second question for you. What is a book you've read or listened to nowadays also counts that has given you a paradigm shift?
There was a book I read. I'm trying to, I was stuck between two when you mentioned this one before. I got to say, because I just read it again for like the third time, is The Go-Giver by Bob Berg. I'm not sure if you've read that book before, but that book, it's an interesting book because it's things that are already in your head if you're naturally someone who likes to give, but it provides almost context that, like, you're hearing it and you're like, oh man, I didn't realize I was thinking that way, but it actually makes sense and there's actually a concept behind it, and it really goes deep into giving without the expectations of receiving, and like giving because, like, you love to give, and it's one of those books that, because it's a fiction story, but it really puts giving deep, deep into perspective. I love that. I mean,
it sounds like something I'd resonate with.
And then reread it. You especially would love, and it's a quick, it's 120 something pages. It's a quick hitter.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll put that on the list. That's something that definitely resonates with me just from you describing it. So I'll definitely check that out. Third question for you is, what's a skill or talent you would like to learn?
I promised my grandma I'd teach my daughter French. So I'd like to learn French. So one of my business partners, actually, his mom works at Rosetta Stone and was able to give me like the app access so I could start learning French. So that's something I want to start. Rosetta Stone advertises that if you spend 30 minutes a day for 3 months, you'll be fluent in a language. So that's something.
Speaking a language for 3 hours a day, or half an hour a day for 3 months, 30 minutes a day,
and you'll be fluent.
it's interesting because I'm fluent in three languages. And what I found is that just speaking languages 100%. Is really the
immersing, you know, yourself.
Immersing yourself is going to get you to learn that language more than anything else. Okay, fourth and final question. What does success mean to you?
Success to me is happiness. I think a lot of people put, you know, success is, they put a monetary value next to success or some type of arbitrary number or some type of arbitrary vanity metric or something of that sort is, you know, success in that sense. Success for me is, it's not like happiness as, it's actually an interesting book called Happier, which is a really good book that talks about the difference in some people put happiness on a pedestal. And when you reach that happiness, it's hard to, you know, to keep happiness. People, that will ultimately be followed with like a heavy level of depression if you kind of put that on a pedestal. It's the cliche of the consistent pursuit of happiness is success to me. It's finding that what lights you on fire continuously and continuously double downing on it and then not being scared to just adjust like in osmosis, like all the time, and consistently finding that or pursuing that happiness. Cause like that's like finding that happiness in the pursuit. You kind of get what I'm saying. Like absolutely. Along the journey.
Absolutely. And it's different for everyone. And so what, like you said, whatever makes you happy, whatever gives you the most pleasure, like do that. And then that's being successful in life. You know, and that's what it's all about.
100%. It doesn't matter. Like I'd say, as long as you can keep your head above water, your bills are paid, your family's safe. As long as you're not like the clock is not at zero in that sense. Like if you can figure out a way to find happiness, you know, amongst everything, you know, that's real genuine success to me.
Awesome. Well, Hakeem, it's been a tremendous pleasure talking with you today. I'm so glad you took the time. Where can our listeners find you? You know, obviously TikTok is the best place. How can our listeners reach out to you or get in touch with you?
Yes. You know, LinkedIn is Hakeem Vallis, a great place to reach out to me. Or if you just go to my website, perspectiveglobalmedia.com, I have a set up a call link on there. And I take calls all the time. I love meeting different people.
Nice. Awesome. Thank you again for joining us. I wish you a lot of success with the media company, with, you know, the season, if it's going to come up. If it's not, you know, getting back in the grind.
Absolutely.
And, you know, hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. Yonah, I really, really appreciate you having me on the show, and keep bringing all of us value on LinkedIn on a daily basis because we love it.
Thank you. I'll try to do so. To our listeners, thank you again for joining us. It's been awesome. This has been a tremendously valuable interview for so many reasons. Join us again next time. Remember, the best advice comes only when you ask. Real quick, I have one question for you. Did you like this episode? If you did, I want to ask you a huge favor. See, the biggest thing that helps this podcast grow and that will spread this message to the whole world is that if you leave a review, a rating, and subscribe to the podcast. What that does is it basically tells the platforms that this podcast is out on is that you like my stuff and I'm doing something right. So take a few seconds out of your day, hit that subscribe button, leave a rating or review. I would be extremely grateful. Also, I want to hear from you guys. So I want to hear some feedback. If you have any questions for future episodes, please find me on LinkedIn, send me a DM, a connection request, Yonah Weiss, and I'd love to hear from you.